My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
That Andre Nicotina Los Hawks beat is one of my absolute favorites. And as a city boy, Dan DeVoe.
I'm down.
I'm sure you know a little something about Nick.
I'm all over it.
Andre Nicotina, San Francisco's finest. Shout out Carter Chickering behind the glass. Evan Giddings with you on Saturdays here on 95.7 The Game. One more hour to go. I got 2 hours of caffeination in me, and I am ready to rock for our final hour up until noon every single Saturday. 888-957-9570 is the number.
After last
a
night,
cleanse.
Coffee today.
No, this is when we keep it rolling. I don't think you understand, Dan. I am on cloud nine. And it might be because I got nothing in my stomach except for coffee and water, but
I don't want to revisit last night. You cracked me up. All right, let's go, man. Let's finish strong, as I like to say. We're on the bell lap. You can see the tape. You got to push to the tape.
Is that a horse racing reference?
What, the bell lap?
Yeah.
No, I think that has to do with the 440 or, you know, the Olympics are coming up. So usually when you get into, that last lap, right? And you hear the little bell go off, ding, ding, and everybody sort of stands. Sort of like the horse race. You come to the top of the stretch.
Well, no, I just thought about it because I'm going to try to get out to the Golden Gate Fields final run this weekend. Yeah, they're tearing it down, man.
By the way,
it's sad.
They're doing the it's the Alcatraz triathlon this weekend.
Ooh.
So I was...
You ever participated?
No, hell no. I don't do triathlons. Are you kidding me? So as you get older, you realize that there's certain things you're just not going to do. Like, I just can never be that person. And I'm not judging, but I could never be... So this
a triathlete?
Is 7 in the morning. No, God bless triathletes. You do you. But 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm riding my bike down to the Dolphin Club, and I ride my bike from the Dolphin Club over here.
You take polar plunges at like 6 a.m.
Yeah, so
you're a different breed.
So I'm riding, and they've got it all cordoned off because the riders for the triathlon, it's that stage, right? They're going down the Marina Greens, and they're just flying, right? And so you have people on the side. Now, this is 7 o'clock in the morning that are bundled up. And I'm assuming that they don't have family or friends that are in this race. But they're there just to cheer on the runners or the racers. And I just said to myself, without passing judgment, that I could never be that person. Like, I could never sit in the cold, in the fog, holding an American flag and a cowbell on the other hand going, yes, go, go, while they're going, you know, 75 miles an hour and they can barely even register what it is that you're saying. I just said to myself, I could never be that person on the sidelines cheering for people as they run by. You see them in marathons and Tour de France. Here, drink my water. As you go by on your bike.
You would never want to hand Lance Armstrong a bottle of water?
No, I'd punch him.
And one of the 18 checkpoints. Sorry, I feel like I just dug something
up. I just couldn't be that guy, man. I could never be the person on the sideline. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, but you do strike me as somebody that, I don't know, might be present for like one of the F1 races in Monaco. Like, I could see it.
Oh, that's
I could
a
see
good race,
it, I could see it dapped up. In fact, I might be wearing my Sunday best to the horse races later today.
Oh, that's right, man. That is awesome. Bay Meadows is officially closing.
But isn't it the same concept, though? Like, so you're not going to hand someone a bottle of water. You're not going to cheer them on from the sideline. You don't have to use an American flag to do it or a horn. But you're going to be willing to watch a car race by you, and you're just seeing them for like 3 seconds.
Yeah, but bro, I'm not in the pit crew. I'm not standing on the side. Like, they're cheering on these people. Like, this isn't, it's not about, oh, you're in first place, win it, go, go, go. No, this is just, they want to be support. I'm not supporting an F1 race. I'm there to see a winner, a loser. I'm there to see the maneuvering.
You're not going to cheer on your guy? I mean, I know you got probably an investment in one of the cars, but.
Well, the good thing about Monaco, Mercedes, and a lot of those F1 races, yeah, is that they do it traditionally through the streets of the specific towns, like Monaco. They used to have a race out in Vancouver, Canada, that was literally, and they do it in Montreal once a year, where it's literally in the streets of downtown, which they convert into the contours of what is an F1 race.
Singapore really cool. Also does that.
Singapore, yeah.
Ooh, the real Fast and Furious. We got to get that up Market Street or down the Embarcadero. Dude, I'm telling you, those cars will be flying, man. I'm going to shut it down for marathons where apparently Dan won't show up to, you know, cheer on his buddies, but.
Seriously, I mean, big chick, could you get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and with your significant other or whomever, bring a son or a daughter and saying, we're going to go stand on the sidelines and we're going to cheer the racers. Well, daddy, do we have any family or friends that are racing in it? No, we're just going to cheer and lend support because that's the good thing to do. We're going to make them feel good, which is, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying I'm not that cat.
Yeah, that's true. But what if I was running a marathon, Dan? Would you cheer me on?
No, I'd be there for you.
From
know,
your
I'm your boy. I'm your boy, man. I might be the guy who just slings you with a tomato so we can laugh about it while you're stoned and drunk the next day.
Oh, how do you feel about cheering on NFL players at training camp? Like, would you go to training camp to cheer on one of your guys? Like, because I see someone like George Kittle actually does make me want to, at training camp, like, be, I don't know, a fan. Like, the way that he interacts with the crowd, he'll throw stuff to fans out there. He'll actually respond to them. If you scream Kittle, he'll give you, like, a wink and a smile. Like, that kind of stuff, I think, is pretty cool. As opposed to, you know, a marathon.
You know what's funny is that I saw, so David Lombardi's Dolphin Club guy. I love David Lombardi. Mm-hmm. He's a good dude, man. He's actually a serious swimmer. So he swam.
I saw him biking through Coal Valley the other day, I think.
Yeah, he lives out that way. So
of course he does.
So he is a, he was a swimmer in Stanford. He wasn't like on, I don't think he was on the number one team.
Ledecky?
But he's a swimmer. He's a big dude, David Lombardi. He's like, he's not as big as Big Chick, but he's in the neighborhood. So anyway,
wow, dude,
two floors down.
But the thing is with Lombardi, so he you know, on his YouTube channel, so he was shooting basically sort of the players interacting, and you're looking at this and you're like, my goodness, look at this. We have a tendency to forget this, but then when you see it in something like OTAs, and there's Trent Williams and Nick Bosa, they're good friends, and they're just hammering up, and they're talking, and you're like, God, those two guys are on the same team. Wow, you forget how good this 49er team is. And then in walks McCaffrey saying, what's up with you guys? What's going on? You're like, God, McCaffrey, Trent Williams, and Bosa? Like, teams would salivate to have these guys. And then just flashing through the screen was George Kittle doing some sort of maneuver. He's running through tires or something. And you're like, oh, yeah, and there's George Kittle. Like, the 49ers, I know we know it, but it's sometimes a sobering reminder when you just see them all out on the same field and just sort of interacting or doing whatever it is that they're doing in their shorts during OTAs. And you're like, my God, that is a very good team. When you talk about windows being open and winning Super Bowls, like, I don't know how often you're going to see guys like that just sort of hanging out on a pitch on a football field.
No, I mean, it's Ocean's 11. Like, it's a star-studded cast. I mean, or 12, 13, whichever one, outside of number 8. That one can be left alone. But it's a star-studded cast. You're seeing so many big-name players roll through the Niners' doors that it does make it, I think, even more frustrating, the fact that they have not got it done and won a Super Bowl. They've been so close the last 5 or 6 years, or 5 years under Kyle Shanahan, that it pushes it to the next season in regards to the importance and the urgency. And I think that's why you hear someone like George Kittle say the state of the franchise is win now, is win a Super Bowl, because there's nothing else to check. Like, even going down Brock Purdy's resume, this is a quarterback who's played now one full season in the NFL, and he's already been to an NFC title game, a Super Bowl. He's been a top five MVP candidate. He's broken, I think, just about every passing record possible for 49ers quarterback all time. Like, there's nothing left for this guy, statistically speaking, to capture. Like, his accolade list is already as long as a lot of 10-year veterans, and he's going into his second full season as starter. I think that's why there's so much urgency and importance that just keeps rolling over to the next season because of that A-list cast that you just talked about, Dan.
Yeah, and listen, I think that when you think of Brock Purdy, the one question I have is that you just talked about all the records that he set, the 113 passer rating. Is that sustainable? Like, I don't think that if Brock Purdy sort of, you know, falls off the cliff a little bit here, we shouldn't be alarmed, because I don't know if he's able to sustain that over the course of his career. But I think that a lot of people are expecting so much more. And I'm not saying that he's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo, who had his best year, was his first full year with the Niners back in 2019 when they went to the Super Bowl and eventually lost to Kansas City. But there are some sort of comparisons that you can draw from those two when you think about their first full season in the NFL. And Jimmy Garoppolo never replicated that sort of season, was never able to be that guy. Is there a little bit of that going on with Brock Purdy in year three?
I think some of that had to do with Jimmy Garoppolo's just injury past. I mean, it felt like he just got more and more broken over the course of time. Like, he just slowly deteriorated as a quarterback, whether it was the ACL, which is unfortunate, the shoulder issues that were continuing to nag. Like, I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is near good of a quarterback as Brock Purdy was, certainly not out of the gates. But I do think that injuries had a big reason to do with his fall off. Brock Purdy, meanwhile, by the way, he did all of that last season after getting off-season surgery on his elbow.
I forgot about that.
Like, he at this point last year, he was in a sling. So he has an entire offseason to get ready. I don't know if statistics are going to prove how much better he is as a quarterback, though. And that's why, to bring it full circle to Brandon Ayuk, I feel like I want him there. Someone last segment, one of our callers, again, 888-957-9570 is the number, brought up how he wants to see Brock Purdy without his top wide receiver to see if he's worth the investment of $50 million or somewhere in the ballpark. I don't want to see that. And I don't want to see it because, not that I'm afraid that Brock Purdy is going to fail, but I just think that this offense isn't optimal without all of its embarrassment of riches. One of the reasons the 49ers are so good offensively is, yes, Kyle Shanahan is a quote-unquote genius and he can turn water into wine and all the rest, but it's also because when you have all of your dudes out there, McCaffrey, Ayuk, Debo, Kittle, let's say, someone's going to be open. If you take one of those pieces away, I just feel like it has a trickle-down effect and it makes the offense less potent, no matter how good Brock Purdy is.
Well, how do you explain Kansas City then? And I know a lot of it's Patrick Mahomes.
Well, I would argue that even though let's take Patrick Mahomes. His first full season in the NFL, he threw for 5,000 yards, threw 50 touchdowns. That was his best statistical season. He was the MVP, took the league by storm. I think he lost in the AFC Championship game. But he was a revelation right out of the gate. Okay, Patrick Mahomes has not put up similar statistics in a full season since his first season as starter. I would argue he's a better quarterback than he was in 2019.
Yeah, but the comparison I'm trying to make is, how do you explain him winning Super Bowls while you continue to strip him of his best wide receivers? And so if you lose Brandon Ayuk, I don't think it's the end of the world. Now, I know you'd like to be, you know, at optimal best with everybody being healthy and good to go and under contract, but I don't think that Brandon Ayuk is at the same level of a Debo or means as much to even a Kittle or a Trent Williams and a Christian McCaffrey. And again, I think that when you think about Kansas City, and you think about Patrick Mahomes. Now, listen, Patrick Mahomes is one of one, all right? So I don't want to make any comparisons between him and Brock Purdy. And that's the reason, the large reason as to why they continue to be relevant when you lose wide receivers. But I do think that without Brandon Ayuk, if it really gets to, you know, if push comes to shove and he hardlines and says, I want Justin Jefferson money, I think you're going to be okay if you go into the season and Ricky Pearsall emerges as a guy, that the 49ers will still be in that Super Bowl conversation.
With Ricky Pearsall as a rookie receiver.
Yes.
Interesting. I mean, if
I don't know anything about it.
But if Ricky Pearsall is that good.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying he doesn't have to be that good, but if he can be somebody that's an impactful player, I'm not even talking about supplanting Brandon Ayuk's numbers and or being better than Deebo Samuel. But if he's good to go along with Juwan Jennings and everything else you have, I don't think you miss a beat.
Interesting. Let's run it by Gene in Oakland's been hanging on. Gene, what's going on? You're on with Dan and Evan on 95.7 The Game. How are you?
I'm fine, fellas. So, first of all, I'm one of those people that believes you need to keep this team and keep its critical players intact this year. This is, in my mind, their best chance to win a Super Bowl since they won their last Super Bowl, okay? And they're not likely to have as good a chance next year when you consider all the personnel changes we're probably looking at. So, you know, look, I tend to agree with you, Evan, that this may very well be the tensest negotiation because the others were out in public. You know, we could see what was going on. Everybody was open, you know, about how their feelings. This is quiet, and now with the Niners not willing to pick up the fines, I'm afraid this is going to become acrimonious. And at some point, you know, I don't know, I'd be afraid of Ayuk just saying, you know what, I want out of here one way or another. And I'm tired of this. It'd become emotional instead of financial. All right. We need Ayuk because, listen, he's not one of the top five players on the team right now, but he's critical. And he fills a position that's not easily filled if he's gone. All right. If he's gone, do we really think that Juwan Jennings or a rookie and Ricky Pearsall is going to be able to step in and do what he did? It took him 2 or 3 years to get to where he was, talking about Ayuk. I think it's unrealistic to expect that to happen. Sure, he's not elite, but hey, he was second team All-Pro, so he's a damn good receiver. I think we need to keep him. And if I could just relate one story that keeps coming to mind. Give me a moment here. I go back 12 years, and I know this isn't a direct comparison, but I remember the OKC situation, you know, when they had Durant and they had Westbrook in their prime.
Harden.
And they had an emerging star by the name of Harden, right? And and he left all for, the lack of the ownership wanting to pay another $2 or $3 million. Of course, it was worth more then, but still, it wasn't much. And they've lived to regret it ever since. I don't want to see that happen to this team. It is the here and now. We have to keep our best players here. And I believe that at the end of the day, somehow the Niners will be able to do it. So,
thanks, Gene. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think that the Harden comp is interesting. I mean, the OKC kind of chose between him and Serge Ibaka. But he's right. I mean, it was just a money issue that couldn't keep that team together. I think this is...
James Harden
different.
Wasn't James Harden at that point.
Well, he was a sixth man.
Yeah, he was good, but he hadn't emerged to be that guy, which I guess is what Gene's point is.
Well, and maybe that also to dig a little bit deeper into that is what Brandon Ayuk actually wants. Like we haven't necessarily posed the question of, is Brandon Ayuk happy with his role in this offense? Like he's grown and his numbers have reflected that his first, you know, four seasons, but is he happy being, in his own words, the fourth option in a run-first offense? I mean, that's what he tweeted out, I think, at the beginning of this offseason, or maybe it was last offseason. It was something kind of cryptic on Twitter. And he's been using social media a little bit more as a weapon to kind of combat, I guess, the Niners' negotiating tactics. To me, also, he mentioned acrimony building. I think that's a possibility if these fines aren't picked up. I would assume that if they sign him, that they would also relieve him of the $100,000 that he was fined for not showing up at minicamp this week, or I would hope that he would. Because if I'm Brandon Ayuk and you don't pick up that money, when last year Nick Bosa held out almost into the season and they picked up his minicamp fines for not showing up, I would be pissed. In fact, I might not want to play for you. Because that's a level of respect that you can't even show me that you showed to your other star player who's also worth big bucks. So it's not necessarily a favoritism game. I just think it's a sign of respect that the Niners have to show Brandon Ayuk if they want to keep him around long term. If they pay him and they force him to pay those fines, that does, to me, build some acrimony between the two sides.
Well, maybe it's the 49ers' way of saying, listen, we don't think you're as important as Bosa and or Deebo Samuel. And maybe it's their way of sort of showing their hand that they're willing to go into another direction. The fact that they went ahead and they drafted Pearsall may have also been another indicator. I don't know. I mean, I'm obviously not privy to these meetings, but if you're to sort of read between the lines, maybe that's the thought process. Maybe they're more along the lines of what it is that I'm saying, that we're good enough with what it is that we have, the pieces that we have, and the fact that we run the football predominantly more than most teams, that as good as Brandon Ayuk is, he is the fourth or fifth option on this football team. And that's just the way it is. And we're not going to change things because of him. And maybe, again, it's them revealing that we're going to be just fine going forward without Brandon Ayuk. Now, that may not be the case. I think part of this, we're all sort of prisoners of the moment. I know that if this was 2 years ago, the Debo thing was serious. I mean, Debo again coming off of that huge season and the threat of him walking out the door. And Debo, didn't he wash his account, I want to say?
He asked for a trade.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's about as close as it gets. And the same thing with Bosa, who wasn't, not only is he holding out, he wasn't even in the state, man. And you thought about just in terms of proximity, he was a big Floridian guy. And it's just like a lot of those things were adding up that he wasn't coming back. So this is all part of it. And I think in the here and now, yeah, it seems pretty tense. But I think that cooler heads will prevail, and Brandon Ayuk most likely will be on this football team. But I'm entertaining worst case scenario. You're a better football team. Don't get me wrong with Brandon Ayuk, obviously.
Yeah.
But if he's not there, to me, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider the 49ers non-Super Bowl contenders because they don't have Brandon Ayuk. But I think one of the big reasons why many people would say they have the most talent in the NFL is because Brandon Ayuk is a part of that. That's why they have the best weapons in the game. That's why I think a lot of people perceive them as a Super Bowl front runner out of the NFC. That if they don't make it out of the NFC, I feel like that would be a massive failure because of their embarrassment of riches this season.
Oh, yeah.
Also because of who they could lose next year. But two things off that. Number one, when Debo Samuel asked for a trade a couple off seasons ago, I mean, it's obviously a big deal. But to me, that was always a negotiating tactic. That was a way to get what he wanted, because I always felt like the Niners were going to pay
Debo. Well, it's easy to say now.
Well, no, but at the time, Dan, there was no other option. Like, you didn't have McCaffrey or Ayuk or Kittle was not as productive, but he was a big part of the team. Like, Debo Samuel was your offense. Remember, Jimmy Garoppolo was a quarterback. So Brock Purdy wasn't here yet. And you had to basically say, like, are we going to get rid of our best offensive player? There were people that were calling Debo Samuel the MVP of the team coming off that season when they made the NFC Championship. So to me, he always was going to get paid by the Niners. It just was a matter of when and how much. Now, if Brandon Ayuk came out tomorrow and asked for a trade, I would believe him more than I believe Debo Samuel when he asked for a trade. I don't think that's a negotiating tactic if Ayuk says tomorrow, deal me to Pittsburgh. Like, I believe that he's going to stand on that.
Well, I think it's easy to suffer for some revisionist history, because when Debo asked for the trade, yeah, we can look at it in retrospect and say, well, we knew the Niners were always going to pay him. But again, if you're to relive that, if today's professional athlete wants out the door, then more often than not, you have to accommodate him. I mean, it happens time and time again in the NBA, and you'll see it from time to time in the NFL. If Debo's like, no, I want to go back to the South, right? Like, I want to play, I'm done with this, and I want out the door, then the 49ers, at some point, somebody is going to call chicken, and the Niners are going to have to deal it. So again, if you're to relive in that moment when your best player is asking for a trade, it's easy now that they already paid him to say, well, all along I knew that the 49ers were going to step up and give him what it is that he wanted. But again, when today's player asks for a trade, more often than not, I'm saying probably in the 80 percentile, they get what it is that they asked for.
And we can get into a little bit more on the other side, but real quick before we got to hit this break, I want to ask you, because I actually don't think it applies much to the NFL. Like, did you think that the Ravens were going to trade Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, I think it was entertaining. I think it was, you know, if Lamar Jackson continued down that road that you know, I want out, again, last year, if you were to talk to people in Baltimore, it was scaring the hell out of them.
Well, but I think that was the whole point. Like, the whole point is to scare the crap out of a franchise, because in football, it's not guaranteed. Your contract is not fully guaranteed. So that's kind of the tactic you have to use. But Dan's long-awaited Dan Hurley rant. We'll come on the other side. I'll take a flamethrower out as well. There was an interesting piece of news I want to run by Devone on the other side. Also, some news about the Warriors kind of trickled out this week as we get set for free agency less than a month away. A lot of contract decisions that the Warriors are going to have to choose from. One final segment coming up on the other side here on Saturdays on 95.7 The Game. 888-957-9570 is the number. My name is Evan Giddings. That's Dan Devone. We're back after this.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Giddings, Dan Devone. One final segment here on Saturdays on 95.7 The Game, 9 to noon every single Saturday. Thanks to everyone who's chimed in on YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union, texted in the Xfinity Mobile text line, called in. We always love the conversations. And I don't know, have we gotten to the Dan Hurley portion
Let's
of the show, Devone?
Let's bring it home strong.
What is it about this guy that just tickles you? Like, don't get me wrong, I think he's smart, but his eyes are, I feel like I can see into his soul the moment that I see him on television. I mean, the guy is off his rocker at press conferences from time to time. He's recruiting Aidan Mahaney from St. Mary's, who's now dead to me. Like, who is this guy? Why should I care about him?
He's the best coach going right now, NBA or college. Nobody's doing what it is that he's doing. It's not by accident, man. This dude is for real. And he's actually a special guy, too. Like, he is just, if you listen to him, you just listen to him talk. Like, forget about a press conference. And if you want to go X's and O's, you're like, my God, man, this is the new Krzyzewski. This is the new Phil Jackson. He's the one guy, like, if the Lakers are trying to be Boston, believe it or not, as odd as that may sound, and build their team, like giving Brad Stevens all the money in the world in that extended contract, like, he's the one guy who could change the entire outlook and franchise and just change the culture instead of these stopgaps for a year and a half, like, you know, the Luke Waltons of the world or the Vogels or the Darvin Hams.
Vogel's a champion, Dan.
Yeah. Well, no, he wanted, won a title, but this is a guy that can, he's a generational, like a 10-year guy.
Yeah, he is someone you want to build a program. I just think it's interesting that a lot of the head coaches from college don't tend to pan out. Like, I mean, Billy Donovan won back-to-back chips at Florida. I don't think he's a bad head coach.
He's good. I put him in the top tier of head coaches in the NBA.
He's a solid head coach. I don't think he's made the difference for some of the teams that have had talent. I'm not saying he's on one now. Obviously, you know, Calipari didn't work out. Rick Pitino was someone who alienated a player like Chauncey Billups in Boston.
He was in New York for a while.
I mean, I'm just trying to think of other guys that have gone from college to pros that have really worked out. Everyone's kind of comparing him to...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Steve Kerr, and I don't necessarily see it because though Steve Kerr didn't have head coaching experience, he at least ran a team. Like he was the general manager of an NBA team that was successful. So
He won and got Shaquille O'Neal. He wasn't very good as a GM.
Well, I mean, they made the playoffs 2 or 3 years he was GM.
Yeah, but I mean, I mean, is that what we're measuring him being a good GM? I mean, I guess.
I mean, he's got more playoff appearances as GM than Farhan Zaidi.
That's true. But it was before the Steve Nash championships, I guess that's what I should.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. I just think it's interesting. Like, the one thing that I draw from that, I guess, courtship of the Lakers to Dan Hurley is that signals to me that the Lakers are a team or a franchise that's looking beyond LeBron James.
Yeah.
And it does make me wonder how much the Warriors are looking beyond Steph Curry or their superstar. Like, is there some, I'm not saying they need to make a head coaching change, but if the Lakers are willing to look beyond just this 1 year, I also kind of feel like the Warriors should be willing to do that too, because I see them as being in similar places.
Well, they are.
The franchises.
They are, which is why I think you saw Steve Kerr sign for 2 years and no more. So that to me was the indicator that, you know, that's the cutoff point where we're looking to move Steve Kerr and go beyond that of Steph Curry. It's time to bring in, you know, a new way of thinking, a new way of doing this. Well, just to revisit why I find the Dan Hurley thing so amusing. You know how this all went down? This is how simplistic Jeannie Buss and why the Los Angeles Lakers are the Los Angeles Lakers. And clearly, when it comes to their front office, Pelinka and company, and it was Magic Johnson, are a bunch of bozos just running into each other. You want to know why they moved off of J.J. Redick and suddenly said, oh, Dan Hurley?
Well, Hurley's got to say yes. I mean, they might come running back to J.J.
There's a good chance
he goes
back to Stores and says, I'm done. Look at no. Because there's reports that much like that of Jim Harbaugh for the last 2 years would leverage the NFL. You know, he got those new deals with Michigan. There's rumors that Connecticut is putting together this lofty package to keep one Danny Hurley.
Well, I think REMA just got a 5-year extension as the women's head coach.
But here's what's so funny about the Los Angeles Lakers. While they were all in on J.J. Redick, I mean, because think about it. Why wouldn't you offer Danny Hurley this deal much sooner than this? Like, why not? Why wouldn't you have done this months ago?
Maybe you didn't know he was interested.
If he was your guy, you at least make the offer. You're the Los Angeles Lakers. I want to tell you why they did it. And this is fact. And this is how simple they are. You want to know why? Because they were in on J.J. Redick. Guess who was on J.J. Redick's podcast? The biggest mistake, the biggest booking mistake that J.J. Redick could have ever done, or his producer.
Dan DeBone?
What? No, it was Dan Hurley.
Oh.
And so Hurley goes on J.J. Redick's podcast. And J.J. Redick he's going to be the Laker head coach. And he starts talking circles around J.J. Redick. And J.J. Redick's looking at him going, holy crap, man, you know your stuff. And the Lakers are looking at him like, you know what, why do we want J.J. Redick? Why don't we want the guy he's interviewing who's Dan Hurley? And from that point forward, they're like, you know, Dan Hurley, you think about coming out to Brentwood for a weekend and hanging out with us? I'm telling you, that's how simple this organization is. It wasn't until that podcast appearance where they recognized just how good this guy is, where they said, why don't we get rid of J.J. Redick and go after the guy that he's kissing up to, who happens to be one Dan Hurley?
I think the idea of essentially your submission of resume, like, you know, you're applying for a job, is going on the competition's podcast. I do think it's, if that really is, God, you follow the breadcrumbs better than most, Dan. You were on the Bronny thing earlier than most, and now you're on Dan Hurley usurping J.J. Redick by using his own platform against him. The ultimate judo move by one Dan Hurley.
But I don't think he was lobbying for the job. It just sort of organically happened that throughout this interview, the Lakers are like, the hell?
So you're saying Rob Pelinka is an avid listener of Old Man of the Three?
I think it just virally somehow got to him and or Jeannie Buss. Wow. And they just realized that this is the guy. By the way, man, just go listen to this guy talk.
He's great.
Just to bring it back home. He watches everything. He was talking about this year's team and some of the motions that they run or some of the plays that they run. And he mentioned Kyle Shanahan. Like, he does not leave any stone unturned. He's like, Kyle Shanahan will come out. First of all, I'm like, Kyle Shanahan? Like, what? So he's stealing from everybody. He's like, Kyle Shanahan will come out in the same formations and yet run different plays. So defensively, you don't know. He's not tipping his hand because you're coming out with a slot and two to the right. And, you know, you're lining up with the strong side left with your tight end. He's like, he'll do that. And off of that, there's so many variations. And so he saw that and he's like, you know, we need to do something similar to our basketball. And then he went into this basketball talk. I'm like, my God, dude, you are definitely a cut above. Not only that, so he watches Kyle Shanahan, who's a big fan of, and he gets these ideas and what he needs to do to implement new innovative ideas with Connecticut. But he also watches a lot of international basketball. And he's talking about FIFA, and he's talking about all these things internationally, what they do. And he's bringing up Turkey. He's like, well, what happens in Turkey basketball in the semifinals this year? So they're running this guy, like, I'm thinking we need to do this. He is, once in a while, you get these minds, and you get these people that are a little bit different. They think a little differently. I think Phil Jackson was one of those guys, and Popovich clearly was one of those guys, and then you have all the disciples like that of a Steve Kerr and company. I think Danny Hurley is that guy, or the next guy.
Well, it's interesting you talk about the different influences. I remember Steve Kerr speaking about, because I think what you're talking about is, I don't know, you know, trying to basically alter or transform the way the game is already played, or just kind of put your own spin on it. I think that's what Steve Kerr did when he got to Golden State. But one thing he talked about is the influence of, like, soccer. So take, like, some of the great Barcelona teams, you know, Piqué, Xavi, Iniesta, obviously Messi, but, like, Puyol, like, all of those great teams that he would watch, and he would watch the way that they move the ball.
Yeah.
And being able to transfer that application from soccer to basketball was a big reason he felt like he had immediate success, is being able to change the way that the Warriors moved without the ball and with the ball, and how you don't really have to run a ton of plays when it's all off of feel. And I think that's the same concept with Hurley. It's just interesting to hear him, though, because, so Dan, I mean, we've talked about, you know, past experience and whatnot. I actually was the UConn pre- and post, you know, kind of like studio host in 2019 when Hurley is his first year
at
UConn.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I got to...
I cannot chart your career, man.
Right when he came over from Rhode Island. Like, 6 years ago, this guy was coaching Rhode Island.
Yeah.
7 years ago, he was coaching high school.
Wasn't he in Wagner for a little while?
He might have been, but I just remember he took those Rhode Island teams far, farther than they'd ever gone before. And then he came to UConn, and everybody was so excited because he was able to get a couple top recruits, but he was really smart. And I do have to say, listening to him during coaches' shows and, like, having a chance to kind of, like, I had to go back and listen, produce, cut things. The guy's somebody I would want to play for.
Yeah.
Like, the guy is just somebody that exudes confidence. And so that's why I do think he'd be a great hire for the Lakers. I just think it's interesting that they might be willing to put the needs of LeBron James on the back burner to the needs of the organization. I'm not sure, you know, who knows? Hurley could just be using his leverage. He's going to go take his bag with UConn and just be back and try and run a three-peat in college. But if he takes that job, I do think it signals from Jeannie Buss that she wants to look beyond the current superstar, that it's not just about maximizing LeBron and AD. It's about building a program. And that is, in many ways, I think, the inflection point in which the Warriors are at, choosing whether to emphasize and maximize Steph Curry this season, the rest of his time, or we want to do that to some extent, but that can't be just the sole focus. Like, you're not a fan of bringing in a middle-aged superstar to help Steph. I think that's the move if you want to maximize him. But if I'm taking notes from the Lakers about what they want to do with their future, well, if I'm the Warriors, I need to start looking 5 years. I need to start looking a little bit further down the line.
Well, then you got to get rid of Steve Kerr now.
Because Steve I wouldn't say now.
Well, but that's, I mean, that's the harbinger, if you will. That's Steve Kerr is in the middle of all of that, because Steve Kerr is not changing the way he does things. Steve Kerr is still trying to play five-out basketball. Steve Kerr still wants to play transitional basketball with a team that's in their mid-30s. And I don't think he's changing. He's not coming in as the new Dan Hurley. So if you're going to look beyond Steph Curry, I think you've got to whitewash the whole thing. Like, it starts with Steve Kerr. You've got to change philosophies. because they're entrenched of doing things one way, and that's Steve Kerr basketball, which has been so successful. So it's understandable why they would be so slow to move away from that. But the reality, really, if you were to step outside of that realm and just look at the Golden State Warriors, it does not make sense that a bunch of guys in their mid-30s want to compete by running up and down the floor with guys who are generations younger than them.
No, but I also think the Warriors are in a position where they need to get back into, I don't know, the limelight somehow. Like, I don't think the Lakers making a move at head coach, I mean, it's the most sought after position in the NBA, I think, if you're a coach. I mean, you want to be the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. But like, that to me is like, that does bring the show back to LA. They're always a show, but to make that kind of move, to go out and get the back-to-back college national champ, to get someone who appears to have a pretty damn good head on his shoulders and can be someone that you envision being around for, like, they've had 7 head coaches in 10 years. I would imagine he's going to be longer, you know, than most of those guys. Even Frank Vogel won a championship. But like, how do the Warriors kind of find, is it a player? I don't know. Is it something they choose to involve themselves in? Like, honestly, I think there's a lot of people that this summer, like, the most exciting thing happening at Chase Center might be the Valkyries. But you found out about earlier today. You found out about earlier today.
Come on,
they,
man,
got 13,000 season tickets coming their way, Dano.
I'm all about the WNBA.
I know you are. No, you're all about the W. What about her? I mean,
do you have any thoughts? I think that's sort of so fascinating, man. Like, because it there's so many layers to it.
I know, it's great. I think it's great for the sport. I mean, it's the reason why a lot of people are watching,
right? Yeah,
all of it though, like not just her, and I don't necessarily look at the way that women are treating her, or the way that a lot of men are covering her, is necessarily, you know, wrong. I'm not one to gatekeep. I don't like when people do that. There's a lot of people coming into the W and into this new space that we're all trying to learn about. And it feels like we're getting a crash course on, you know, rookie hazing, stardom, expectations, just basically everything. It's a brand new sport to a lot of people, and I love every second of it.
Yeah, but there's also the pushback, those people like me. I know about the WNBA. I appreciate the WNBA, but if you were to ask me, do I watch games? Am I a fan? I'd probably tell you no. But now, am I? Yeah, I find a lot of this intriguing, but there are some that would push back, like, well, you know what, Dan, there's no room for you. You weren't here 3 years ago, bro. Like, you weren't a part of this, you know, some 5 years ago. Why are you jumping on the bandwagon now? Well, because you're relevant now.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't really watch hockey, but if something was to happen with hockey where we're talking about it, we'll bring it on.
If you can go scalp tickets for the Rangers game, you're going to be at game 6, you know?
Thank you. Hey, listen, man, I didn't really pay attention to golf until Tiger came along. There's nothing wrong with that. That's sort of like where we're at as sports fans. But there seems to be this begrudgingly, well, listen, you're a little bandwagon. Well, hell yeah, I am when it comes to the WNBA, because you guys weren't really relevant a couple of years ago. There's nothing wrong with me saying that.
No, I mean, well, it's also a little bit of the West Coast mentality, like, when sports capture our attention, it's usually because things are going well. There's so many different things to do out here. There's so many different ways to spend your time and money that, yeah, you do need to deserve our attention. Like, you do need to compete. Otherwise, I might lose interest. I think that the WNBA is interesting because I also think it's a little bit of what the NBA is looking for and kind of missing right now, which is this idea of a hero and a villain.
Yeah.
Like,
Angel Reese and...
Well, I mean, Angel Reese or you know, Kennedy Carter, I forget it was. Kennedy Carter, who was the woman who kind of hip-checked Caitlin Clark. Like, people are framing her as this villain, and I don't think she necessarily is. I think that's just how she plays. Might have been dirty, might have been clean. I don't know.
That was dirty, but there's nothing wrong with that.
But it's drawing eyes because people are interested in the game within the game.
Exactly.
Like, the NBA Finals Game 1, you know, I think Boston's a bad matchup for Dallas, and I think they can switch, and, you know, Luka's going to have a tough time getting a shot. Like, there's no game within the game. Like, there's nobody to root against except for you hope that the Celtics, who have been seemingly underachievers for the last half a decade, don't get over the top. Like, there's nothing about this NBA Finals series that really resonates with me. I would rather go watch Caitlin Clark because I don't know what's going to happen in that game. I just think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I love the whole Angel Reese and the rivalry because it grew out of college and it's continuing now in the WNBA. Like, those storylines, I'm with you. Everybody's getting paid in the NBA and the NBA Finals, win or lose, right? And you get that sense, right? Like, yeah, Dallas would like to win this thing, but there are no subplots. It's not like back in the day where you had the Bad Boys and everybody hated Detroit, or it was Bird versus Magic, and there was really this sort of, you know, there was the geographical rivalry of the East Coast versus the West Coast. The one thing, though, I do want to touch on, this idea of being a bandwagon or late to the party, there is... That word, that phrase should not even be applied in 2024. If I want to be a bandwagon San Francisco Giant fan, if I'm one of those that, you know, is down on Union Street and now suddenly it's fun socially to go to Giant games because they're winning, well, so be it. And you better open the doors and let me have a good time as well as anybody else. I don't want to hear any of this. You weren't here when this team was, you know, 20 games under 500, man. Where the hell were you, you know? You want to know why? If you're going to charge, once again, $40 for a beer, and if you're going to have to make me take another mortgage out on the house because I want to take my family to a weekend series, if you're going to charge those prices, you're damn right that I'm not going to support this team when they're underwhelming or under 500. If you want to make it free, I'll come. But if you're going to charge those prices, don't call me a bandwagon. No, it's now suddenly you're worth my consumer dollar. It's not about being a bandwagon. It's about being a product that's worthy of me being separated from money in my wallet.
That's the same thing we do here with these Chrome microphones. Every single day we walk in and you say, what's the A block? Like, what's the hottest story? What are you hot on? What are you passionate about? And it might be Brandon Ayuk's contract negotiations. It could be, you know, the Giants beating Bruce Bochy. I don't know. It could be Caitlin Clark. But like, we have to decide as a team what we're going to talk about and why. Why it is worth a listener's or a viewer's time. It's the same thing with bandwagon, quote unquote, fandom. Okay, if I have so many different sports to be interested in, why should I devote my time and effort to those sports if I'm not getting anything back? I have to feel some sort of two-way street, in my opinion, to feel invested as a fan. Yes, you're going to, you know, appreciate your team, and you're going to watch when they're down. If the 49ers are getting their ass kicked by, I don't know, the Los Angeles Rams, if they're down 38-0 in the third quarter, I'm turning the game off. That doesn't make me a bandwagon fan. That means I don't like to watch my team get their ass kicked up and down the field for four quarters. I feel like that's completely understandable. And so these people that are, I guess, trying to deflect, you know, the Joe Schmo, the Dan Devone, the Evan Giddings from watching the WNBA or trying to figure out how we can get invested in the WNBA, I would say welcome everyone. You're going to have some a-holes. You're going to have some people that don't get it, but you also might attract some people that do love the sport. And that can also then spread the word. Like, I feel like that's the whole point, is this is something new for a lot of people. And it doesn't appear like it's going away. And I would also say the fact that Caitlin Clark is struggling in the beginning of her career, both, you know, statistically speaking, but also with, I guess, being ingratiated into the league or being hazed to some extent, that to me is interesting.
Yeah.
And that to me will keep my eye on her and her career because I want to see how she responds. I don't want to see someone that comes in and has, you know, just the most immediate success. It gets a little boring when someone wins all the time. I want to see someone who's a hero go down, get knocked off the top of the perch, and then have to rise back up. Caitlin Clark was, you know, a phenomenon in college. Okay, how is she going to be in the pros? I want to watch that step of her career take place.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. There's the racial component too, which a lot of people don't want to go down and treat that with kid gloves. When you talk about the popularity of the sport, along comes this white girl from the Midwest who is suddenly perceived as the savior.
And all of a sudden, Pat McAfee on me, Dan.
The WNBA. No, but there is a lot of reality to that. And understandably, that someone comes along, that there's going to be some sort of inherent, like, well, what have you done? And there's been a lot of people before you. But I think there are I find it so fascinating. But at the end of the day, for me, I think I'm representative of a lot of fans out there. I suddenly find the WNBA, whether it's because of Caitlin Clark or the hatred towards or directed towards her, I find that intriguing from an entertainment / sports perspective. And I watched a lot of her last game. They suck as a team, by the way.
Yeah, they're terrible.
They're not very good. And the schedule makers who put them up against some of the best, you know, defenders in the WNBA.
They also played like the most games in the first month of the season.
I think she's averaging like 16 a game. It's not like she's been that bad.
Well, if we're being honest too, it is unfair for any collegiate women's basketball player who literally has to go from the draft into the pros.
Yeah.
Like, Like, it's basically been 2 weeks. She played an entire college season.
That's crazy.
Made it to the national championship, got drafted a couple weeks later, and now is playing in front of 20,000 people. When you are, I don't know, well, I wasn't going to say Bronny James. When you are whoever the number one draft pick is in the NBA this year, you get like 3 or 4 months to rev up and get your body prepared for what is going to be a grueling 82-game season. That is not afforded to someone like you.
No, and that certainly factors into all of this. And I also think that the fact that she has struggled in a weird way legitimizes the league. If she just stepped in and had the seamless transition from that of Iowa and then started going for 35 and dropping 15 dimes a night, you're like, okay, there's not a big difference between the collegiate level and that of the so-called pros in the WNBA. But the fact that she's getting knocked to the floor and that she's recognizing that the speed and the size of the players at this level is very different from the collegiate level, like that of the adjustment of any rookie who's stepping into the pros for the first time and seeing a fastball from a major leaguer as opposed to somebody down at double or triple A. Like, part of that to me lends credibility to the WNBA in sort of a weird way.
No, I mean, I also don't have an issue with the way that she's quote unquote being treated by her peers. Like, it's a rough league. Like, it's a professional league. You know, when Ricky Pearsall steps on the field and goes over the middle for the first time, Darius Leonard's going to try and knock his block off. Like, someone's going to come downhill and try and take this kid and welcome him to the league. So I feel like that's kind of what's happening. I just don't think we're used to seeing it on the female side.
Well, that's part of it.
And yeah, that's like, a little shocking.
Are you okay? They're fine. They're athletes. Stop.
I haven't heard Caitlin Clark complain.
No, and she's been... That's a great point. Like, I think that if she's taken this on the chin, and there's a lot that she can complain about, but... And she's not even, you know, she's got the $28 million, shoe deal. There's nobody who's even near that sort of contract in the WNBA. So there's a lot of resentment that's targeted her way. And I think in a weird way, she would tell you when no one's looking that she understands it and maybe to a certain degree has expected a lot of this, if not even more.
Probably. I mean, she's had the bullseye on her back, I think, since probably her junior season at Iowa, you know, in regards to the... I don't know, the finale with LSU and all the rest and the blowback. I think she's dealt with it well. I think the rest of her peers have also dealt with it well. Like, there's probably some jealousy. The league is also probably in a better place because of her. I think it's just a classic example of multiple things being equally true. And it's in a space that a lot of us are new to and haven't really had a chance to figure out our own opinions on. So I think it's what is great about sports, and I'm looking forward to continuing to watch and see where it goes, because sports are the great.
Who's
going to
call?
Story.
Who's going to call the play-by-play next year
for the Valkyries?
Yeah.
Well, sore subject. No, I would.
Has it been decided?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I would love to call games for a WNBA team.
I mean, is
especially Paige Beckers is on the team next year.
Oh, is that right?
Well,
and that Cameron Brink
probably
is
going to be a top.
Cameron Brink is for real. I watched her play in LA.
Yeah, Stanford's own.
Yeah,
Cameron Brink's fantastic.
This rookie class is I think like one of those. Maybe it's not Bird and Magic coming into the league the same year, but I think it's gone a long way in terms of, again, you know, intriguing people like myself to actually sit down and watch this stuff.
Well, we'll continue to do it, and we will continue to chat next Saturday, same time, same place, 9 a.m. to noon on 95.7 The Game. Dan, it's been fun. I feel like the last 3 hours have been a breeze.
And your roommate there, Big Chick, will, you know...
He's not my roommate.
...will come home a little bit sooner, because, you know me, I'm the parent in all this. Maybe you'll come home sooner than 3 a.m. and somewhat... You know, somewhat sober.
As long as you know I'm ready to rock at all times, okay?
True, true.
I've been caffeinated all day, and now I'm going to go take a nap. But thank you very much, Dan, for joining us. For Carter Chickering, for my co-host Dan DeVoe, my name is Evan Giddings, saying so long. We'll talk to you next weekend, Saturdays on 95.7 The Game. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, everyone. Have a good time.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.